Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Joyce Morrison. We're going to be talking about redevelopment and this idea of private property. Now, we know in the Declaration of Independence that there is a reference to the idea of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but those who have studied Thomas Jefferson's version, initial version of the Declaration of Independence, know that he was referring to life, liberty, and property. Then somebody came along, and before the final version of the Declaration of Independence was put out, why they changed property to pursuit of happiness. But this idea of life, liberty, and property was a phrase that had been used by John Locke 100 years earlier. And this was one of the basic rights of Englishmen, was to the right of life, liberty, and property. And when the Constitution is written, you will find in two places the reference to life, liberty, and property. You'll never find the words life and liberty used without the word property, because it was felt in our form of government that property and property rights were essential for freedom. Now, matters dealing with property, at least individuals' property, were to be dealt with at the state level, because every one of our states was to be a republic. We were never to be a democracy. We were to be a republic. Everybody in America knew that 50 years ago, but by an organized program of deliberately dumbing down Americans and changing our textbooks, and have putting people into positions in the universities who either did not know or didn't understand, or did understand and didn't want their students to understand, that the idea that we were a republic. And the whole idea of a republic, we were a nation of law, and the power of government was to be limited. There were certain things that the federal government was to do. But the ideas and concepts of life, liberty, and property were to be dealt with at the state or the local level, never at the federal government, because the federal government had nothing to do with the individual, and they couldn't even tax the individual. That was the idea upon which our freedom, our republic, was based. Well, recently, of course, there's been a lot of changes. There are those who really want an all-powerful government that regulate every aspect of human endeavor, tax people, collect dossiers on people, have video cameras every place, monitor people, track people, know everything they can about your financial records, know everything they can about your health records. You are simply to be controlled by the all-powerful state. And there really are people who feel that common folks are just too dumb. They believe in a ruling elite, and this is what it's really all about. But now we get down to, of course, the recent issue, and that is the recent Supreme Court decision that basically said that if somebody wanted to take property, a piece of property that you have, and use it not for public use, as a road or perhaps for a school, but to give it to another developer so that he could make money off of your property. He could buy it from you, but why should he buy it when he can get the state to take it away from you and give it to him at a reduced price? So the Supreme Court came up with a decision that's been very controversial. I'm going to let Joyce pick up the story there. Joyce, with that as a background, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself?
Well, I started becoming interested in property rights a number of years ago when I saw that we were, in 1993, many of you remember that we had a very severe flood in Illinois and old Missouri and through the Midwest.
Hold that thought there. Right, we'll be right back in just a moment. All right, go ahead, Joyce.
Well, when we had this flood, many people were not permitted to go back to their homes, although the the first time their homes had ever been flooded, and they needed to go home and look it over and decide for themselves whether they wanted to go back or not. And they had a very difficult time getting closure. And I thought, why? Why wouldn't they want them to go back home? That's their home.
Well, now, were some of the homes destroyed, or what was
it? They were destroyed
in
the flood. But we've seen how many hurricanes go through Florida and the coast, that people are not restrained from rebuilding there. And so this is the first flood of any really consequence in over 100 years, and I personally would be very frightened to go back and build in an area that I thought could be flooded, but many people were not afraid, but they were not permitted, and I thought, but that's their property.
Well, what happened to the property? Were they compensated for it, or was it just taken away?
Yes, they were compensated. They were either bought out. They may have kept the land, and then just the buildings then were no longer on the land, and some of the area was farmland. So the land just lay, you know, was farmed over where the homesteads used to be.
But then some people then did return to farming there.
they farmed, yes. And we had river towns and what have you. And many of those people, they could have cared less if the government had stepped in and given them any help. All they wanted to do was go home.
Now, right now, how many people are we talking about who then lost their property at this time?
I'm not certain I can give you an actual figure.
Are we talking about hundreds? Are we talking about thousands?
We're talking about thousands.
Thousands of people then were, by government edict, prevented from going back to their homes or rebuilding their homes?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, they were bought out. The government came along and bought their homes out. If it was damaged a certain amount, then they could rebuild, or they could build on some kind of a high stilt, which was not really practical. So it was then that I really began to say, what is going on here? And I realized that they were clearing out the Mississippi corridor, and there were no they would like to see no people living in that Mississippi corridor.
And so we're really talking about thousands of people who, because of a flood, suddenly really lost the right to their property, even though they may have been compensated for it. Were they given a fair amount of money for their property?
They felt it was. They really did. I don't think that people
Hold that thought just for a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Joyce Morrison, and she has been involved in property rights for some time, and she was talking about how back in Illinois, where she lives, there was a great flood, and what happened was that after the flood, suddenly the government came in and said, and this is the first flood in 100 years, this is not something that's happening all the time, but the government came in and said, you can't build on your property. Now, you may be able to farm the property, but you can't rebuild on your property except with very strict, you know, restrictions, and put your house up on stilts. You know, one flood in 100 years, and they're going to put all these restrictions on you, and some of the houses probably weren't too badly damaged, some of them probably were, but what they really were doing was the federal government wanted to clear this whole area of land, apparently, at least according to Joyce, and although people were compensated for their property was taken away from them because the government wanted to clear that part of the area along the Mississippi corridor. Would that be a fair statement, Joyce?
That's very good, yes.
All right, you go ahead then and develop the idea. So you suddenly see this happening. About how long ago was it?
This was in 1993.
So this was your first inkling that something was happening that wasn't quite right. You didn't know what it was. You probably didn't know anything about Agenda 21 or these, the whole environmental movement, this whole idea of really restricting the number of people, clearing the land, returning it to its natural habitat. But you knew that these people were being deprived of their land by government edict. Now, was this federal or was this a state edict?
This was federal.
All right, fine. So pick up the story from there.
Then I began to realize what a TIF district was. Excuse me. What a TIF district was. And how eminent domain and all of these things began to play together. And We had in one of the areas, in the flood area, they had purchased some farmland, and they hoped to make a new little village, and the flood victims could go there and build them a new home. Well, by the time the archaeologists and the every kind of ologist, biologist, whatever you wanted to say, came in and gave their evaluation of that property, it was 3 years.
So these people then couldn't build a new home for 3 years?
It was 3 years. So by then, they were very discouraged. They had to have some permanent foundation. They'd already found some place to live, maybe not where they would have liked to, but they did find a home, and it was my job to help them find homes.
Now, who were you working for then?
I worked for the mental health department. It was through Farm Resource Center, and they worked through the state mental health, but it was with a FEMA grant.
All right, fine.
And so I worked with these people trying to get them back into some kind of housing. Well, I was getting very, very disturbed because this time was going on, and these people still could not get a permanent home with land that was being purchased and the grant money that was being used to buy them a place. Well, when they prepared this place for them, it was too expensive if they could have moved there. And so this beautiful land was there and beautiful lots and what have you, and now they made a TIF district out of this.
Now, but explain what that TIF district is. I don't know the term.
Okay. TIF is tax incremental financing.
Okay.
And what that is in a blighted area that can be set aside, and the taxes from that area stay in that area, your property tax.
All right.
All right. So they use this as a TIF area, what they called. And it is now filled with gorgeous new homes from people from the city. All right.
Now, this is the area where the people were going to move to, but this was not where their old homes were, I assume.
No, it was up higher, where they would be elevated from the floodplain. But now, since none of the people that were flooded could move there following the flood, it was never ready for them, it was too expensive for them, it made the lots available to the people in the city, which we live close to the city. And so they came out and they built these gorgeous new homes. And it's a very beautiful area. The only thing is, they pay nothing toward our schools, toward our roads, toward our libraries. They pay nothing toward those because that money stays in the TIF district, which is a little village.
Now, this is a very special deal with special tax concessions to a lot of very wealthy people, then who do not pay their share of the upkeep. Is this what you're saying?
Yes, they pay their tax, but it stays there. It does not go into for the public use.
No, but then is it used then to develop their own schools or their own roads?
No.
What happens to the money then?
They use it for their own. They have beautiful street lights. They have many things that most communities don't have.
Okay.
And
now,
they use.
Now, then who pays for their schools?
No, not at all. And they have a brand new school there that the rest of the county actually has paid for.
All right. So anyway, do you feel this is sort of an inappropriate situation, and the people that the area was originally built for never got a chance to enjoy it, so it favored one group over another. But the biggest thing was the people were forced off their land because they had one flood in 100 years.
Yes.
All right.
One that would remove everyone. And so the thing that brought that to me was I began to look into TIF districts. And in Illinois, we have 790-some-odd TIF districts, just like that one. And what it does, it takes it's to be a blighted area, but most of them are not. And the people who are in those TIF districts who live there, a lot of those people, through eminent domain, are forced out. And this has been going on across the country, and I learned more from Chris Norby, who is a supervisor in Orange County in California.
Right.
And he has a book out that's called Redevelopment, The Unknown Government.
And you actually linked to that, an article I read of yours.
Yes.
And this article is up on this article, or this book is up on the Internet. And it really goes into this whole redevelopmental scam, which favors some over others. And some people, of course, get the advantages, and many people don't get the advantages. Would that be a fair statement?
That's very fair. And I have a lot of information out of Chicago. And Chicago, they're finding the same thing. We have some, even the University of Illinois has gone in and done some studies and found that TIF districts are not fair. They do not work. They are very much favoring the big people, and the little people will suffer.
All right. Now, Kirsten, we get into this whole idea of eminent domain. And, of course, the government took the land there in Illinois along the Mississippi Corridor in a process of eminent domain, compensated the people. But this was because the federal government wanted that land really taken back to a more natural status. Just didn't want any people living there because some bureaucrats decided that it should be much wilder and not developed. Would that be a fair statement?
Actually, eminent domain was not used, but they were just strongly persuaded to do that.
All right. Well, could the people, if they wanted to, have gone back and stayed in their homes?
If it were more than 50% damage, no.
All right.
No, they did not have that choice.
But if they wasn't more than 50% damaged, did some of them go back and actually repair their homes?
A few did if they had insurance.
All right. But most of them didn't have insurance, did
they? Many of them did not have insurance, and so they could not afford to go in and repair their homes. And so they had to depend upon the sellout to help them.
All right. Well, okay, so that certainly was one issue, and that got you involved in this whole idea of eminent domain. And then did you begin to see how this was being used in local communities, sometimes to favor developers over the individual property
Absolutely.
Owner?
Absolutely, yes, very definitely.
Now, is this a very common thing in Illinois?
It's very common.
Now, how does it work for our listeners? You know, certainly I own a nice piece of property, and that's right next maybe next to a racetrack, and they want that land for a parking lot. It has nothing to do with the public good. It's simply the people who own the racetrack want my property, and I want a fair price for it, and they don't want to pay it. So what happens?
All right. When that happened here in Illinois, and the racetrack was a very popular venture because it was a very economic boom. We have a lot of people interested in racing these days. And so whenever that happened here, and they had a lot of power to go next door and take some man's business away from him, and they would have had adequate parking. And so they did this. And we have a development agency in Southern Illinois that's called Southwestern. SWIDA, Southwestern Illinois Development Authority, and they had at that time what's called quick take powers. Now, what quick take is in eminent domain is if you don't want to sell me my land, your land, I will quick take it, and then we'll discuss it later.
Now, but who is they going to take it? Now, who's going to take it? Is the developer going to take it? Is the local
development
community going
authority to will take it and then give it to the development?
Well, that's pretty nice if you're a developer, because all you have to do is pay off some people in government. And that, in fact, I'll never forget when Jay Leno was interviewing Arnold Schwarzenegger after this recent Supreme Court decision, and Arnold said that quite spontaneously why that's wrong, because all you have to do is pay off the politician.
Mm-hmm.
Arnold knows how the system works.
Yes. Yes. Well, he's been in the system. He knows what happens. And anyone that has been around the system realizes that you're not going to be the one invited to their party. The poor guy is not going to be there, although he is the one affected. You're not going to be on their council. You're not going to be as a representative.
Now, well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Joyce Morris, and we're going to talk about this idea of eminent domain and how should it be handled and how can we preserve property rights. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, Joyce Morrison. We're really talking about this idea of eminent domain and the right of property, which is the very foundation of our freedom. Now, of course, originally, according to the 45th of the Federalist Papers, matters dealing with life, liberty, and property were to be handled at the state level, not at the federal level. So basically, we were talking recently with Joyce about a case in Illinois where a gentleman had a piece of property next to a racetrack. The developer wanted that property. They went to the local politicians who just said, we certainly want that racetrack, and so we're going to seize the property next to the racetrack from an individual who's living there, and we're going to give it to the developer. He's going to have to pay something for it, of course, but it'll be a lot cheaper than his having to negotiate the sale with a fellow who owns it. And, of course, you can be sure that, he's going to get it at a very good price. This is the way the system really works. You get an appraisal, and you get an appraisal that gives you the price that you want, and that's the price you pay the local community for the property they've taken away from somebody else. So let's pick up the story there. The gentleman who lost his property was pretty unhappy, wasn't he?
Yes, of course he was. And at that time, he had the ability to fight this in court. Now, many times they know you're too poor, you can't go to court. It costs a lot to get an attorney and fight these cases. But this gentleman was not going to give up, and he did. He went ahead and pursued this, and it took it all the way to the Illinois Supreme Court. And when he got to the Illinois Supreme Court, there was a battle among the judges. But we had some very fine judges that were sitting on the Supreme Court at that time, and they ruled in his favor.
Well, you know, we have equal justice here as long as you've got the money to buy it, and this really is a tragic situation. So many of our civil and even our criminal cases, if you've got the money and you can hire the best lawyers, why, you can get off. And if you don't have the money and you can't hire the best lawyers, why, you're going to get convicted, or you're going to lose the case. And where is this idea of equality under the law? And really, we're getting so far away from that, you know, in our judicial system. And then, of course, so often these cases are not allowed to go before a jury. They are administrative cases, and they have administrative law rather than constitutional law. And this, of course, is increasingly getting to the point where we will have rule by men or women wearing black robes rather than, of course, by a trial by jury. Well, anyway, in this case, why, apparently the man was actually able to win, but it must have cost him an awful lot of money, didn't it?
I'm sure it did. I don't have an exact figure, but I'm certain if he took it all the way to the state Supreme Court that it cost him. And most of us cannot afford to do that. And when they came out with this ruling recently on the eminent domain with Kelo versus New London, Connecticut, that had mixed blessings in a way. It's been happening already. The eminent domain has been taking people's property when they really shouldn't, but the people could not fight back on this. But, you know, I now see a great awakening in America. People are concerned. They're saying, wait a minute, I'm not safe in my home. It could be a mall tomorrow. And I'm a little guy. What am I going to do?
All right, well, what are we going to do? How can we protect ourselves from predatory people within government? And hold on, we'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joyce Morrison. We're talking about this idea of eminent domain. Now, what was really so interesting about the Supreme Court decision was they really didn't rule on eminent domain. They said it was not something to be handled at the Supreme Court level. It should be returned to the state to be handled there. Wasn't that more or less the impression you got?
I'm not certain that it was quite that simple.
All right. Well, what is your interpretation of it?
My interpretation is now we really don't have a lot to go back on. They have set a precedent. They've opened up a keg of worms.
Well, I think what they've said is that the federal government is not going to protect your property. If it's going to be protected, it's going to have to be protected at the state level.
And that's why every state and everyone in every state should be after their legislators to get some legislation to protect them.
Absolutely. And this, if you believe in the strict interpretation of the Constitution, which I do, every one of our states should be a republic, and every one of our states should protect the rights, of property. Property rights is the very essence of freedom. And they should actually certainly protect them from predatory bureaucrats at the local area. Many times people on the city council or on the board of supervisors, who certainly are going to be very, very close to the people who give them money. Many times major developers. And this is the sort of thing goes on. Where do you possibly get off taking property from one person to give it to another? Oh, we're going to have a higher tax base, they say, or we think that it'll look nicer than it did before. But the whole idea is that property rights are the basic right we have as free men. Take away those rights and make them subject to government. Why? Then no man's life or property really safe.
No, and unfortunately, we've reached a sad day when we can't stand up in America and say, my dream is to have property and to be safe within my home, and that is my domain. And we've come to the place where with these rulings that they say the big guy can take over the young couple, the old people who've lived in that house for 60 years, and they can move them out, and they're going to have to find what just compensation is there, Dr. Stan, whenever a person has lived in that home all their life. Those are their neighbors. Those are their ethnic background is all around them. That's their schools. That's their churches. That's their store. How can you justly compensate that?
Well, I don't think that you can, and I think that if you can make these people an offer that they're willing to accept, then this is how it should be handled out. It should be handled between the person who owns the property and the developer who wants the property. But, there is no justification to increase the tax base or to want to put in a Walmart or one of the major types of companies to have your property, because they want your property because of its proximity to something else. That is totally immoral and totally wrong. And I think that many Americans would agree with that. But unfortunately, there is a liberal mentality that wants to control every aspect of human endeavor. And under one guise or another, they will certainly go along with it. In fact, you commented earlier when we were off the air that in the Illinois Supreme Court, when the case of the man who the racetrack wanted his property, there were some of the judges who wanted to give it to the racetrack developers, weren't there?
Oh, absolutely. There was one very liberal judge, and he came head to head with this conservative judge, and she held strong, and I'm so proud of this woman, because she was a new judge, and she did not budge on it, but he did, and he, I wish I had it in front of me, some of the transcript of some of the things that he said. Because he was very, very unkind.
But eventually he lost, and the good guys, at least, or the good gals, one way or the other. In this instance, this woman, this judge was a woman, and she did what was right. She held for the Constitution, and this idea, because you see, every one of our states is a republic. This was one of the stipulations of our federal constitution, that every state would have a republican form of government, not a democracy. There is no instance in either the federal constitution or the Bill of Rights or the Declaration of Independence or the Federalist Papers or the state constitutions of any of our 48 states initially that ever said that that this was a democracy. Every one of them said it was a republic. So how have they convinced us that it's a democracy? Well, the same way that the Supreme Court justices who open their sessions every day, when the crier comes in and says, God save the United States in this honorable court, how those judges can say, well, we can't mention God in the schoolrooms, we can't mention God in the courthouse, why, of course, we can't do that, and of course, it's so a matter of schizophrenia. They know that they're betraying their oath of office. They just don't want the public to know that they know. We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty, and welcome your calls from out across America. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Joyce Morrison, and I had seen an article she had written on, I think it was News with Views, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I was really so impressed by it, and she was talking about this effort to make people understand the dangers of eminent domain and how this process can be, can really be misused by unscrupulous politicians and unscrupulous courts. So why don't you sort of pick up that idea? What did you learn from this book that's up on the Internet, written by the fellow from Orange County, the supervisor from Orange County, a county supervisor who's been fighting this process for a long time?
Yes, one of the things that I thought was most interesting in what he had to say was our tax dollars were never meant to pay for development. They were to pay for schools. Not that if you wanted to get really constitutional, they weren't even to do that. But we do accept the fact that our tax dollars go to pay for our schools, pay for our highways, pay for our libraries, pay for our basic use. But it was never meant to pay a developer. And I thought, you know, this is so true. Our tax dollars are subsidizing development, and yet the facts and figures and the studies are showing that that development is not paying back the communities. And when we get into the eminent domain part of this, when will they find that churches are not contributing as much as a Walmart would?
And I share with you, and I think it's very important for people to understand that there seems to be a tendency many times in the part of local communities, in fact we saw it here in Santa Cruz, where the developer wanted to put in a major hotel. But he wanted the local city to pay for 25% of that. So, you know, then the rationale was, well, my goodness, you know, we're going to have this hotel here. And think of all the jobs it's going to bring in. Think of all of the taxes it's going to raise. But it's going to take the local city, you know, about 10 or 15 years, I've forgotten the details now, to recoup the money that they are going to have to go out and borrow to put into this development for the developer. And they have to go into partnership with the developer. Where in heaven's name, where does this concept of government go into partnership with developers ever come from? I'm just not quite certain.
Well, I think greed, you know, and we have people who are in municipal positions who are very greedy, and they think, oh, we get grants, we get this money, and look at all the sales tax and what have you that we're going to have coming in, and the revenue. They fail to realize that these developers, they can go into so much debt and never, and it's government, you know, the taxpayer is going to have to pay them out of debt.
Hold that thought right there, for Joyce. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Joyce Morrison. We're talking about this idea of eminent domain. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And the point Joyce made is that there is increasingly across America a tendency for local governments to go into partnership with developers with the idea that, oh my goodness, you know, if we just have this development go in, look at all the increased tax base we're going to have, look at all the new jobs are going to be, if we're really going to make this area prosper. So we're going to go in to business with the developer. And we saw this one instance recently in Santa Cruz where the city was going to go into partnership with the developer and I think put up something like 50% or 25% of the cost of a major development, a hotel. And the idea was that, the city was going to get all these taxes, but how are they going to get taxes on the 25% of the property that they own or the development that they own? And how long will it take them to pay that off? And if it isn't a good deal for the developer to go out and borrow the money, why should the taxpayers of a community put up money to help a developer develop? He's doing it all on borrowed money anyway. And the reason he's going to the city is because the people who ordinarily loan the money don't think it's that good a deal. So with that as a background, let's go to Ray, who's calling in from Coeur d'Alene. Ray, how are you doing? Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, maybe it was mentioned earlier because I tuned in late, but what judges in the Supreme Court basically tended to give up our eminent domain rights?
Now, basically, this was a very, very unusual decision because it was the liberal element in the Supreme Court who said it should be returned to the states. where it belongs, and it was the conservatives who were on the wrong side, knowing, saying the federal government should have to say on this. So it is a very confusing issue. But if you believe the Constitution, why the whole idea of our Constitution was to limit the power of the federal government and matters dealing with life, liberty, and property and the individual were all to be handled at the state level. So here you saw the conservatives on the wrong side, in my estimation, the liberals on the right side. We live in a world gone mad, Ray.
Well, in other words, Scalia, he was on the right or wrong side?
He was on the wrong side on this one.
Really?
Yes. Because he wanted the federal government to be able to intervene. And if the federal government can intervene to protect your property, the federal government can also intervene to take away your property.
I understand. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts on that at all, Joyce? Maybe you disagree with me.
No, I agree with you completely.
All right. There are a lot of people who would disagree with me on this one, but Joyce, do you have any thoughts?
I really don't have an opinion. My opinion on this is that a government should not have a say in our property because it's already been defined in the Constitution, and your right to own property and your deed should be enough to protect you with this. And I think, though, I would like to add, whenever the states began to draw up legislation, I'd advise the people to watch that legislation very closely, because I understand that there's some that want to give, instead of just taking eminent domain and using it like it should be for roads, for schools, and what have you, some of the legislation will say, well, bring it before the legislators and we'll decide whether it's public use or not.
And that's a dangerous precept, because those politicians, well, we usually have the finest politicians that money could buy. Unfortunately, sometimes we have the finest judges money could buy as well.
That's right.
That, of course, when that happens, why, no man's life or property are safe. Anything else you want to say, Ray, before we let you go?
I remember years ago when the Dodgers went from Brooklyn to Los Angeles, and Chavez Ravine was apparently taken over. The county agreed to condemn that land where many of the minorities lived there, and I know of individuals, they were happy to see the Dodgers come, but they were opposed to the way that was worked out.
And I agree with you totally, and I believe the idea of taking people's property away for a sports stadium, why, that
right.
is totally unconstitutional and unconscionable, but they do it anyway.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
And you know, Ray, the big problem is people are always concerned when it's their property that's being taken, but not when somebody else's property is being taken. If we don't stand on principles, then, of course, we may very well no longer have property. God bless, and thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye, and let's go to Roger. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But this is such an important issue, and the problem is that they have, by gerrymandering here in the state of California, a minority can control the state legislature simply because they have gerrymandering and they get their people into office and you can't get them out. Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is not one of my favorite people, but sometimes he really says exactly the right things, and what he's trying to do at the state level now, I support, at least as far as a fiscal responsibility and redrawing the districts. But basically, Arnold Schwarzenegger said, you know, I've forgotten the figure was, we got 140 congressional seats and Senate seats and assembly seats, something like that here in the state of California. Don't hold me to the number. Maybe it was 200, but it was quite a number. He said at the last election, not one of those seats was changed that was actually up for election. So basically it means once you get in, you're in for life. And that's why the legislators like this. They don't want to change the system. And even the Republicans, even though they're in a minority, don't want to change it because they don't want to have to worry about getting reelected. Once you're in forever. Go ahead, Roger. You have a question.
Yeah, more of a comment as such, but you recall that a few days back, contrary to the notion that the federal supremes turned it back to the states per se, Pastor Whitney, I believe it was, probably butchered the name, agreed with me that they in fact did not deny themselves the power as such. And I'm not quite sure that they should have as such. Their decision would have been wrong in either event, as it turned out. But I'm not certain that the the language of the original Pent did not mean that to be one of the few federal powers that perhaps should prevail over the states in not being able to do any taking except for public use, etc.
I think that if you look at the 45th of the Federalist Papers, you'll find that James Madison disagrees with you. So look at the 45th Federalist paper, and then we can talk about it again. Anything else, Roger?
That's all. God bless.
You too. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, at 464-8295. And Joyce Morrison has written a very, very provocative article. It appeared on the newswithviews.com. Incidentally, if you don't go to that website, you really should. There's some very, very excellent articles there, and we read them whenever we have a chance to. And Joyce's article really stood out as she talked about this idea of eminent domain and how it is increasingly being used to take away people's property rights. And why don't you pick up the story and the things that you've really learned as you've studied this, Joyce?
Well, I think that I can see big people and little people, and I have a compassion and a heart for those who are the little guy. I guess, you know, I've always been the one for the little guy. And when I saw this, and I saw the power struggles that go on in the big business, and how unfair it is, and how they're making decisions for, in some of these areas, for the people who live there. And those people who have lived there for many, many years, and then they have to move over for a business, you know, or for someone to make money. And I'm not against being capitalistic, you know, that's who we are. But I am opposed to someone making money off the backs of the little guy.
Well, I think the thing is that if a developer wants to buy a property, what he does is he has a realtor go around, he gets an option to buy that property because he doesn't want anybody to know he's trying to buy it because then the price would go up. But he gets options on all the property, and then, of course, he can go to the local community board, planning board, and say, I want to put in a Home Depot here, or I want to put in a Walmart, or I want to put in a Walgreens drugstore, and that's his right. But he has negotiated with the individuals, you know, who were there, and apparently given them a fair price. They were willing to sell, and they were willing to buy. But that's not what this eminent domain is.
No.
The eminent domain is you go to the board of supervisors and you say, I want all that property in there because I want to put in a nice store. And see, those houses don't look very good. They're sort of blighted. And so we want to go in there. And, well, of course, you're going to be running for office here next time around. And I'll certainly remember, you know, how loyal you were to this concept of increasing the tax base by, of course, giving me what I want. I'm sure they're a little bit more subtle than that, but this is the way that process really works. Unfortunately, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So
absolutely.
Let's go to Will, who's calling in from Missouri, of all places. Hi, Will. How you doing?
Very good, Dr. Stan and Joyce. I've got a couple of real quick comments. One of them is that in all of this, we've got urban renewal and the county-city planning that's impacting this. But in regards to the 100-year floods and the high-water flood panels and whatnot, that triggers FEMA. And FEMA has been in the business for a long time of mapping lands and looking at lands. And whenever there's a local flood disaster, I live in a floodplain, whenever there's a local disaster, they're always on the spot and on the job coming out and working in the community. But that brings in the federal government into your town, and that's not such a good thing. But if we go back and look at it from the standpoint of the flood insurance companies, in this area, for instance, there have been no flood insurance available for a long time. But that's an insurance market that needs to be tapped by the big insurance companies. And so there's a lot of pressure to alter things so that we can get insurance, flood insurance, and just basically property insurance into the area. But flood insurance is tied directly to like emergency 911, the geospatial databases that brings in also fire trucks and police, and they work together hand in hand, particularly in the rural areas. And so this whole dynamic has to do with bringing in outside sources and lots of controls and control mechanisms. And unfortunately, the 100-year farms and the small people are taking it a real bath for this. And as far as whether or not a developer should be allowed to take the land or not, that's a battleground, and that's a good one.
But you see, the other thing is, well, that there is another agenda out there.
I understand.
And there really are people who want to get people off the land. There really are people who hate humanity, who believe that there are too many people in the world, and wouldn't it be wonderful if we could return the land the way it was before the wicked white man came and the Indians and the buffalo roamed over the prairies. And
well,
you may think that's incredible, but if you read the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report that came out of the Second Earth Summit, and our Jeannie Soderman has done a wonderful job of summarizing that, it's on our Sustainable Development Syllabus, everybody should read it and understand the mental framework of these people, these wicked and evil people, who really hate humanity and would take away our property and would under one guise or another. So go ahead, Will.
Okay, well, that aside, most of the locals around here, when I talk on that level, they don't understand it. But what they will do is they will go to bat for flood insurance, they will go to bat for fire trucks, they will go to bat for a lot of these things. And so part of it is, like you've always said, is education.
Right.
But the other part of it is to understand that the financial dynamic that's happening here is actually displacing people for and in support of the introduction of the fire trucks, the flood people, and developers coming in and taking away farmland. Now, when that happens, what the trigger there is, you go from this very low tax on, let's say, a 50 or 100 or 200 acre parcel, because it's all taxed on raw land, versus that tight little community that Joyce described, where you've got $200,000, $300,000 houses in a nice tight subdivision, and you can really stack the property taxes in there, and that will make a lot of money for the county. And I think that's where the county comes in, and that's where the local judges come in.
Well, I think that if you'd heard, of course, this was a TIF district where the $300,000 homes were, and they kept their tax money. It didn't go to the county. That was the one of the big things that really bothered Joyce. Wasn't that true, Joyce?
Yes, that's right.
I thought it was tax incremental financing.
That's what it is.
But is there still not a property tax on those residences?
Well, there is, but they keep the money. It doesn't go into the general pool.
That's unconscionable. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Stan.
God bless. And thanks. And you keep working with those people there in Missouri. They're good people. They just need to know what we're up against.
That's true.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. We've got time for one more call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. That's 464-8295. Well, what were some of the other things that you think would be important? And this issue of eminent domain and misuse of eminent domain.
Well, I think that in the eminent domain, now that we've opened up all of this and we're all afraid, and I think everybody now is beginning to wake up to the fact that we should be afraid, and so many people have not understood property rights. It has not interested them, and this has opened the door to interest them into property rights that everybody is vulnerable now.
I really think that is so important. That unfortunately, usually, if it's somebody else's property, why, that's a shame. When it's your property, it's a catastrophe, it's unconstitutional, and people get angry. But we have to be concerned about the principles. And when one man's property is taken, why, no man's property is safe. I think that's one thing that we should learn from this whole issue, that there really are people out there who have a different worldview, a different world vision. And I'm sure you've come to that conclusion as well, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. And my big concern is that churches could be very vulnerable through this. You know, a church doesn't exactly pay a lot of taxes to the local government.
Well, actually, there is some federal legislation, and even though I oppose the basic tenet upon which it was based, it is the law of the land, and basically it really does protect churches. In fact, gives specific privileges to churches and keeps local planning commissions and anti-Christian bigoted members of the city councils and boards of supervisors from preventing churches from building where they want to. So there are certainly advantages to that, and our good friend Brad Dacus with the Pacific Justice Foundation has been able to use that new federal legislation on a number of occasions to his benefit. Now, if the law, I don't object to his using it at all. I just wish we could get back to an understanding of what the Constitution should really be about, and I wish we did not have people who were so anti-Christian and so bigoted in positions of power within government. That is what really concerns me, because there is growing bigotry at the highest levels of our country, and nobody ever talks about anti-Christian bigotry. We talk about anti-Semitism, how terrible it is, and anti-Muslim, and anti-women, and feminist, and anti-gay, but never anti-Christian. And yet, it is one of the most powerful forces in America today. I believe that there really is an organized, orchestrated, conservative effort to discredit and destroy Christianity. You'll see it in the movies, you'll see it in the entertainment medium, you'll see it all the time, and well, you certainly see it with the United States Supreme Court and the decisions that they have handed down over and over again, excluding God from the classroom, including God from the courthouse, excluding God eventually, if they have their way, from America. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program. Here is Joyce Morrison. Well, Joyce, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay. I'm not certain just how to wrap it up.
Well, that's your job. Oh, look, do you have a website? Do you have anything of that sort?
All right. I write regularly for the IllinoisLeader.com.
IllinoisLeader.com.
Uh-huh. And all you have to do is under the columnist, and you click on my name, and I probably have 3 years of articles that are listed there.
Well, I'm glad you're out there on the front lines trying to get this information out. What sort of response do you get from people who read your articles?
Well, it varies. I have a lot of wonderful, wonderful responses, and then I have those who are from the liberals who really attack me pretty rashly sometimes, but that's okay because I'm getting their attention. At least they're reading.
Well, the thing is that an awful lot of liberals are good people. They've just never stopped and think of the implications of what's coming down the line. There were a lot of good people who joined the Nazi Party thinking it was going to make a better society and going to solve the problems of Germany. And of course, they joined something that was totally and inherently evil. And either they repented of it or they became totally dedicated to this idea of an elite should rule the rest of the common folks. And that really is the mentality behind so much of what's going on today. This total disregard for freedom under God and replace it with control by the state. Wouldn't you say? Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would, very definitely. And I would just encourage your listening audience to stand up and stand what's important for them. I think the ball games, the television, and all these things are good. I have no problem with that. But let's not lose our country while our boys are fighting across the seas. We're losing the battle within.
And remember, the other side goes to all the meetings. They run their people for office. They are dedicated to taking control of government at every level and controlling you.
You have to go to the meetings.
And you've got to go to the meetings. You've got to sit there and be bored. I'll never forget when I was in the House of Delegates of the California Medical Association. Every year I'd say, I never want to come here again. This is the most frustrating, idiotic situation, and I went back for years, and I eventually won them around to my position. Got a standing ovation from the House of Delegates of the California Medical Association, but really didn't do any good because the leadership really had a different agenda, and tragically as well. That's a whole different story, but anyway, you got to hang in there, and this is what you have to do. Joyce, thank you for everything you do, and I hope you stay in touch with us. Other things come up, please let us know.
All right, I sure will. It's been a real pleasure to be on your program this evening.
Good night, and God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is a very, very important issue because it goes to the very heart of our Constitution. It goes to the very heart of this idea of freedom. And remember, this all goes back to John Locke. Life, liberty, and property. That's what he wrote about. That these basic concepts freedom came from God, and God had given us life, liberty, and property. And this was really the Christian worldview that was so prevalent at the time, the founding of the colonies here, and then, of course, the writing of the Declaration of Independence, and you will find so many Lockean phrases there in the Declaration. The idea of nature's God and nature's law, those were Lockean ideas. And then, of course, of life, liberty, and property. Of course, the idea of that there was a creator, and that those ideas came from a man named Samuel Rutherford, who was a Scotch theologian. And whether Thomas Jefferson was a Christian is not really unimportant. The important thing is that he was writing from a Christian worldview, as were literally all of the people. And of the 250 founding fathers of this country, there were not more than three or four who were not evangelical Christians or Catholics. There were a couple of Catholics, but they were predominantly evangelical Christians because this idea of freedom under God came from the Bible. So if you really want more information on these concepts, we carry material, and if you'd like to know something about America's God and Freedom by William Federer, we think it's such an important story. Bill Federer is one of my favorite people, and he's written an 800-page book going into the quotations of all of the founding fathers of this country. If you haven't read David Barton, Original Intent, you need to. And there's another book called The Wall of Separation. Going into this whole idea of a wall of separation between church and state, it just doesn't exist. It was created by Supreme Court justices who had a geopolitical agenda, and that was to destroy the Christian foundation of this country and convert us into a secular nation that would lead the world into the New World Order and the New World Religion. And that story is told, I think, quite well in my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, or Ted Flynn's excellent book, A Hope of the Wicked. So if you'd like more information, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, our last newsletter is The Occult Hierarchy, Part 2. What is the occult hierarchy? Well, you can go up on the Internet under Google and look up the occult hierarchy. See who's writing about it. There really are organizations on the other side that are part of the occult hierarchy that write about it and the plan that they have for the world. And they put a capital P on the word plan to deify it. And once you get used to reading their writings, you can begin to understand everything that's going on today. They're waiting for the return of their Lord, Maitreya, the Christ, not Jesus Christ. And what they're describing, of course, is the return of the Antichrist. There are Luciferian organizations that have branches all throughout the world. And the Theosophists are not the only ones. It gets into the OTO, the Rosicrucians, the Masons, and the average individual has no idea. Because most of our so-called anti-communist organizations would never talk about these things. Why? Because they were organized by the very people that we're talking about. They were set up as straw men to be knocked down. And until you can begin to understand what this is all about, you cannot be effective in the battle, for we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. Please go to my website at radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com, and where you can listen to our programs on the Internet 5 hours a day, and then you can listen to the archive programs. But really, we want you to learn. We want you to be able to articulate these ideas, to know where you can get the source information, and then, of course, get to others and educate them and encourage them, of course, to listen to our programs, and then pray for America and pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until Monday, when we'll be back with you, here are those who are leaving. May the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line from Southern California, Carol Matriciana, and Carol's certainly one of our favorite guests. And 2 weeks ago, Carol was with us, and she was talking about going through the 40 Days of Purpose. And we had so many calls asking for copies of those tapes on the 40 Days of Purpose. But tonight we were going to talk about Harry Potter. And, of course, Carol has done films on, videos on the Harry Potter in the past. She studied the author of Harry Potter, what is the real message in this phenomenon. It is amazing how many of those books were sold the very first day. I heard something like 7 million copies of Harry Potter were sold the first day. Could that be right, Carol?
You know, I heard that it surpassed the sales of the Bible. Is that extraordinary?
Well, of course, yes, it is extraordinary. It is a phenomenon, but tell us, what's wrong with Harry Potter? After all, it is just a children's story, isn't it?
It's first of all, written by a British author, Joanne Rowlings, J.K. Rowlings, and what she said was that she was going to write a 7-part series about a little witch called Harry Potter, who goes to boarding school at the age of 11 years old, and that she felt that one needed 7 years of indoctrination to become a wizard. And so she takes us through a year of boarding school each year till Harry, at the first book is Harry at 11 years old, then 12 years old, then 13, then 14. Now Harry is 15 years old, 16 in book number 6. And she feels that by the time we get to book number 7, that Harry has become a perfected wizard and has been able to plug into his human potential and able to fight using his own resources as a witch. Now, Harry goes to the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry with 350 other students who are all learning how to be adept witches, and along with their various tutors in the occult, in the dark arts. They're tutors in astrology, in black magic, in the dark arts of being able to read tea leaves, converse with dead spirits. In fact, in the boarding schools that Harry, in the dormitories that Harry and his friends all stay in, the 4 fraternity homes, they are conversing with dead people, spirits, ghosts, who go along the corridors of Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. So here we have Harry, in fact, visited by his dead parents, who imbue him with powers. His father comes back to give him advice. And so as Harry is being taught in the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, so are hundreds and thousands of students who are also reading the books along with, as Harry is being taught in his school, so are the children, the real readers of the books, being vicariously taught witchcraft.
And of course, really, it's not hundreds of thousands, it's literally millions of children here in the United States and throughout the world who will be indoctrinated and fascinated with this ability to contact the supernatural, and of course tie into this this power that is available from the other dimension. We'll be right back here with Carol Matriciana. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carol Matriciana. And pick up the story there, Carol.
Well, there's this, your question was that surely Harry is just a fictional book and, you know, it's fantasy. Well, yes, Harry is a novel. He is a fictional character. However, his religion is the religion of witchcraft, which in 1986 was deemed a legal religion by the Supreme Court. It has been given IRS tax-exempt status. There are Wiccan chaplains in the military today. And for the first time in human history, this adult religion of witchcraft has been made child-friendly and brought into the classrooms of American schools across the nation, where teachers now read witchcraft 101, basic witchcraft, in the classroom aloud with their students. At a time, Dr. Stan, when the Bible has been taken out of the classroom, when the Ten Commandments have been taken out of the corridors of learning, when children aren't allowed to say prayers based in the Bible, Christian prayers, here we have Harry Potter, a legitimate religion of with IRS tax-exempt status being read aloud on our taxpayer dollar in the classroom.
And, of course, we can't celebrate Christmas or Easter in schools, but we can celebrate Halloween, which, of course, is a satanic holiday. And, you know, you wonder how long it's going to take for the American people to understand that America has ceased to be a Christian nation. America has embraced the pagan beliefs. In fact, in the Bible, we're told to avoid witchcraft and sorcery and divining and all of these things. And yet, they are increasingly accepted. And our children are being indoctrinated in this. And believe me, the books are so fascinating because you become one with these stories. And the ideas are implanted, indelibly implanted, in the minds of every one of those children to read those books, wouldn't you say?
Well, this is how scary the books are, Dr. Stan, that actually I went to the railroad station where Harry goes to in London, and this is where J.K. Rowling is so clever, because she mixes reality with fantasy. There is an actual legitimate Paddington station in London where Harry goes to catch his train to go to his Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. However, the platform doesn't exist. But thousands of children all around the world come to this platform so that they can go to Harry's school.
Hold that thought there. We'll be back here in just a moment with Carol Matriciana as we explore this phenomenon that is destroying the hearts and the minds and souls of American children. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Carol Matriciana, and we're talking about, of course, the book Harry Potter, the Harry Potter phenomenon, and she's simply commenting that there is this station in London, England, where there really is this station that, and the platform isn't there. Of course, to enter into the Hogwarts school to get on the train, you have to walk into this pillar, and so you sort of simply dissolve yourself and fade into the pillar, and then, of course, you're into the other world, this make-believe world. But so many people want to. In fact, my understanding is that really there have been many, many children who've wanted, have actually written wanting to get into Hogwarts school. They honestly believe it's true. And if they believe that is true, then do they accept the contact with the supernatural? The supernatural is there. You can contact it, but you do at the peril of your eternal destiny.
Of course. And, you know, while the critics will say, well, don't be so silly, children can differentiate between fantasy and reality, apparently children can't, because I interviewed the station master who said that children come from all over the world and want to go onto the train of Hogwarts and try and go through this brick wall just the way Harry did, so that they can go into their make-believe world. Well, in a sense that if they say that, and then you go onto the actual website, the internet, which invites hundreds and thousands of children to go to Hogwarts, children actually do want to go to this boarding school and be at the same boarding school as Harry. Now, why do they want to go there? Because they want to be like Harry. They want to be able to have the powers that Harry has. In fact, some of the children interviewed in the movie I made, Harry Potter Witchcraft Repackaged, Making Evil Look Innocent, they actually said that they wanted to do the magic that Harry Potter did so that they could obliterate their teachers or have the loved ones that they wanted, or get rid of their parents, or whatever their wishes were. They wanted to make these wishes of theirs come true, just the way Harry was able to be able to do this in his books, in his school.
And incidentally, you did a wonderful job on that video. What's the title of it again?
Harry Potter, Witchcraft Repackaged.
Right. In fact, we actually carry that. We think it's an excellent, excellent video. It's got a lot of footage from the Harry Potter films and showing how this all fits together. The problem is, Carol, there really is another dimension. And if these children want to contact it, they can. But, of course, it's a danger to their eternal soul.
Well, what is so extraordinary is that there are Christians today that are, in fact, Christian publishers have books by Christian authors that are saying that it's okay for children to read Harry Potter. In fact, I was on the radio last week with a fellow called John Granger, who's written a book called Finding God Through Harry Potter. He was articulate, had a tremendous argument about this being a good literary piece of literature, that J.K. Rowling had written this in a classic form of literature, and he put it up there in the classics with Chaucer and Shakespeare, so lifted this piece of writing up without looking at its content, rather idealizing it as a piece of literature, without looking at its spiritual content, and then, of course, started dismissing my concerns by saying, well, I'm only a filmmaker, whereas apparently his interpretation coming as a literary critic was far more valuable than mine as a documentary filmmaker. So it was a character assassination rather than looking at the content, where I said, you know, we need to be concerned what our children are reading, and that if God finds witchcraft detestable, and that he says in Deuteronomy that we shouldn't even listen to what is being, what the pagans are being read or taught, why are we allowing our children to listen to this kind of thing in the classroom when other religions have been taken out, or the Bible primarily has been taken out? Well, he couldn't even begin to see this argument, and said that J.K. Rowling was a Christian, she was baptized in the Christian church. Well, yes, she was baptized in the Scottish church, and yes, she is a churched person, but what has a churched person got to do with what she is spreading through these books, which are based in a religion that God finds offensive? And she studied in university, she studied folklore, mystical religions, the Greeks and Roman mythology. She is very, very aware of what she is writing, and she integrates so wonderfully her research into these books to make them realistic. So she is actually depending on the realism of mythology in these books and teaching children, who usually wouldn't be taught at this level at school. They'd usually, if they wanted to do other religions, mythology and folklore, they'd be doing this at university or college. But here are young, undiscerning minds being taught, confused as to all these different religions. And then, of course, Harry, our hero, he lies and cheats, and he has a whole moral code that goes along with the mythology and the folklore of this particular worldview that J.K. Rowling is writing through. So when Harry lies and cheats, he gets rewarded by his teachers for what he does. So we have what the schools have been perpetuating for the last decade, situation ethics, now being taught through Harry Potter's books, which are so politically correct in the redefining of the new global child.
And the thing is that it's been said you are what you eat, but you also are what you read. Those ideas in books are implanted in our subconscious, and they will be there forever. And when you begin planting this fascination with the supernatural in the minds of our children, they will be drawn in that direction. There's nothing here that would draw them to God. What we want, of course, is books that will draw people to God, to the God of the Bible. These lead them away from the God of the Bible into the things that the God of the Bible abhors. And how you could possibly justify something like that in the name of literature. I mean, you know, you could say Mein Kampf was well written. I mean, it certainly had a lot of wonderful phrases in it. It inspired people. But look at the end result of what it was. And, of course, the origins of the spiritual forces that energized Adolf Hitler, in my estimation, are the same spiritual forces that are behind Harry Potter.
And, well, you know, Excuse me, Dr. Spence. Please continue.
No, go. You go right ahead.
Well, J.K. Rowling, just when you mentioned this, she herself admitted that she was going on a train coming down from Scotland to London, and that she actually got given the book. She got given the book
now,
in
Ms.
an Lund's instant.
Like they were channeled to her then.
Yes. And she admits that. And she says that, you know, that this, characters and the character, of course she's done masses of research, and of course she's also got the background in her mythology and all that. And then politically she's a very interesting person, because she fits into the whole sort of new world order, in a sense of where her political affections are, where she was, while she was in university, she was with Amnesty International. Her last two books, which were outs, the outs that she edited out of her last two books, went, all the sales were given to the United Nations, her cause for the children, for UNICEF, where she supports the population control. And her child, her daughter Jessica, she named her after Jessica Mitford, who was in English politics, was a subversive, somebody that fell away from conservative British thinking at the time when Nazi Germany was coming to its rise, where Jessica Mitford, in fact, supported left and socialist views and married an American lawyer that started up your Communist Party here in America. So we see Rowling's political persuasions, her, which in a sense is much more important than her spiritual beliefs, because she would, although she says she's a Christian because she was baptized into the Church of Scotland, it really by her fruits you can see that that doesn't in any way line up with the biblical, the heart of God and God's opinions. But in her books, she clearly shows that those that have Christian values are called muggles. Now, in England...
How could any Christian demean Christianity and call people who have Christian values muggles?
It
sounded to me like she's more anti-Christian than Christian.
And that's what the books portray, that anybody that has any traditional values and standards that we would uphold are called muggles, and they're befuddled and they're ridiculed and they're silly people, whereas the witches and those that believe in Harry's, promote Harry's worldview, are seen as the superior race, the all-knowing, the ones to be admired. And of course we see that as thousands of children around the globe support Harry Potter, which has been translated into over 60 languages and put into over 200 countries in the world.
Well, it seems that Christianity is on the defensive, and of course evil is on the throne. So, but then, of course, what would you expect in times like this? And when we get back, maybe Carol, tell us a little bit about, you know, what the end result was of her discussion. And I can tell you about my contact with witches. In fact, one of them was very, very furious with me because I'd appeared on a national television program called Unscrewed. Nobody's ever heard of it, but millions of young people watch this all the time. And when I spoke out against witchcraft, why, my goodness, it was I certainly had opened a can of worms. We'll be right back. Well, Carol, tell us what happened on this. Did you make any points? What about the callers? Did you take calls? What was the response of the audience?
Well, Dr. Stan, we have got Christian publishers out today. In fact, the last three Harry Potter books, there have been Christians that have been defending Harry as terrific pieces of literature and ridiculing those that are seen to be Bible-pursuing, ridiculing those that hold a sort of fundamentalist view, and that these books are fantasy, they're just fantasy. But, you know, while Wicca may have been, while the religion of witchcraft may have been redefined as fantasy, the bottom line is that this fantasy this fantasy religion, or this thing that is being called fantasy today, is a legitimate religion, has been given IRS tax exempt status, does have Wiccan chaplains in the military. They are proselytizing our children. I mean, this whole Harry Potter phenomenon, one can see that these are predators. Witchcraft has become mainstream. They are after our children. They're getting our children through Harry Potter being read aloud in the classroom. Harry Potter has been published by Scholastic Inc., that have been the publishers of school materials for 70 years in the classroom. These books are being read aloud in the classroom, and the extracurriculum questions lead children to go into the internet, and of course Scholastic comes under AOL. AOL and Scholastic are under Time Warner. Time Warner is promoting the Harry Potter films through the Warner Brothers movies. We have AOL promoting Harry Potter through the internet, where school children are able to access the extracurriculum questions and go into Wiccan websites in the classroom on taxpayer dollars and have witches help them understand the religion of witchcraft. Now, how many of our children in classrooms can go into Christian websites and have Christians help them understand the Bible in a clearer and more appropriate way? This would not be allowed. And then we have the schools busing children. When the Harry Potter books were made into movies, the schools bused hundreds of thousands of children all across America to the movie theaters when Warner Brothers bought out the Harry Potter books. Did we see children being bused to the theaters when Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ came out, for goodness sakes? No.
Are you suggesting that there's some some inequality in the situation we're facing today? Of course we are. And ladies and gentlemen, you must understand that we are turning away from being a Christian nation to being a atheistic nation, and now, of course, the next step is to a frankly Luciferian nation, because although witches are not necessarily Luciferian, they're tapping into the same supernatural realm by which you will find the diviners and the sorcerers and the mediums. They're all going into exactly the same source. This is where their power comes from. And the fact that most of the adults, and certainly very few of the children, really understand that there is another realm out there. There is another dimension, and if you tap into it, you can have truly supernatural power. But you do so at the risk of eternal damnation. We'll be right back here with Carol. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Carol Matriciana. Her book, Harry Potter, and of course, it goes into the background. Pardon me, this is the video that she's put out that we have. And we're going to open our lines here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But right now we have Tony on the line from Aptos. Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Doing fine. Do you have a question for our guest or comment?
Yes. My question is, how do you either challenge or defend that situation when they're reading it in the schools? And, you know, how do you approach it, or what do you do to challenge it?
All right. The question from Tony is, how do you challenge this? What do you do when they are using this in the school? And where is the outcry from the churches?
Tony, that's a really good question, and I'm proud to say that when my video, Harry Potter Witchcraft Repackaged, first came out, the Harry Potter books were required reading in schools. Because the impact of this film, so many teachers realized that this was religion versus religion, faith versus faith, the books now have become recommended reading in the schools. But we still need to educate the teachers, let them understand, and the principals, that if we are going to allow this basic 101 witchcraft to be read aloud in the classroom by the teachers to our children, then we need to have other religious books promoting other religions. Now, at the time, teachers said, well, we're promoting reading. Well, at the same time that J.K. Rowling's books were being read aloud in the classroom, it just so happened, not that I'm advocating Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series to be read aloud in the classroom, but it just so happened that Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series were also on the top of the New York bestseller list at the same time that J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter books were. So if reading was really the issue here, then surely parents could have chosen which worldview they wanted read aloud in the classroom. Now, reading wasn't the issue. It was an indoctrination of a religious worldview. So J.K. Rowling was brought in saying that this wasn't a religious book, this was merely fantasy, whereas Tim LaHaye's books were said to be religious because they were based on a biblical worldview. So, you see, they can choose what they want to choose. And the thing is that there were teachers that said, all right, children didn't need to, I mean, if parents came in and argued. Well, I heard horrible stories that of children whose parents did come in and argue in the classroom, and so the child was put into the corner or out into the corridor, ostracized by the other schoolmates, ridiculed. And so parents that did ask for their child not to be, not to participate in this were shunned, if you will. And that was that's horrible, and that does sadly happen. So I don't know what's the best way of dealing with this, except pointing out to the principal and the teachers that this is a book on religion, that we do have Wiccan chaplains in the military, that this is an IRS tax-exempt status, that witchcraft is legitimate, that it is the fastest-growing religion amongst teenagers, and that we are rearing a whole generation of children to be, in a sense, desensitized with the dangers of witchcraft, so that by the time that they become teenagers, they will be fully fledged pagans.
And that's exactly what our educational system is aiming at today. And Tony, if we have
has any legal group been able to pick this up and create some sort of an argument based on the religious ruling and been able to prove that it's religious and shouldn't be taught in the schools?
That's a good question, Tony. I did give my video to several teachers that have asked me and said that they were going to pursue that. I don't know if it has been pursued. I would be very, very willing to work with any lawyers and any legal organization that would like to take this video and the information and that, you know, we can work together on this. I think that would be a very valid way of tossing this book out of the schools.
And Tony, if you knew of any school where this was being done, you can get in touch with me and we'd get in touch with Brad Dacus, and he could bring an immediate lawsuit against that school to stop it, and of course use this as an opportunity to let people understand the truly demonic forces that are inherent in this entire phenomenon that is sweeping America today. Hey, thanks very much.
Thank
for
you.
Coming. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and we'll be back here in just a moment. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, of course, is Carol Matriciana, and we're talking about the Harry Potter phenomenon, and of course, I think it's so vitally important that people understand that they are indoctrinating our children in this, in witchcraft, in Wicca, in this idea that you can tap into the other dimension and get tremendous power. We've got Roger calling, and again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Roger, how are you doing tonight?
Fine. Yeah, I just wanted to ask if you please, if you had any insight on one of the particular pushers for the Potter books was so-called Scholastic. I think years ago it used to go by Scholastic reading.
Yes, Carol mentioned that the Scholastic was the major publisher for textbooks, and they certainly had this originally. Did Time Warner buy it up from them, or is Scholastic part of Time Warner?
And initially, years ago, wasn't that a heavily Rockefeller-infused institution?
What do you mean by that, Roger?
Well, that's just I'm going off fumes of memory here, so my apologies.
Okay, fine. Oh, do you have anything to tell about that, Carol?
No, if you know any Rockefeller connection, that would be very interesting. I'd be very interested in knowing what their original connections were. All I know is that Scholastic Inc. are the USA publishers of Harry Potter, and that they have provided school curriculum to the schools for the last 70 years, and when they became the publishers in the USA, then of course they brought it right into the schoolroom and then worked with AOL and Time Warner because they come under the same umbrella. And so here we had a book that then became part of the curriculum, and the children got bombarded with it, not only in the classroom but through entertainment, and all done in the name of reading. But actually, even bigger than, let's say that the children don't become witches, which I don't for one moment think that every child that reads Harry Potter is going to become a witch, but what happens is they become sympathetic with the worldview, they become emotionally tied to Harry Potter, and what Harry Potter sees as his ethics and his moral world then becomes part of the moral world of children. And Harry, anybody that has involved his parents, his family, not his parents, excuse me, his foster parents who are in the world of traditional conservative
thinking. Hold that thought there, Carol. We're going to have to go. Well, Carol was just simply saying that the books seem to have a tremendous impact, and the Harry's foster parents, who are traditional, they're obviously Christians, they're belittled, they're demonized, they're marginalized, and that is, of course, the way that this so-called Christian writer, Rowling's, treats Christians, and of course she glamorizes those deeply involved in the occult, those who lie and cheat and steal. That's all right, that's wonderful, but, oh, if you're a Christian, you're certainly a terrible person. Hey, Roger, thank you so very much for calling. Anything else you wanted to say?
No, that's all.
Good night. Okay, well, let's go to Terry, who's calling us from Sun Valley. Hi, Terry, how are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I was wondering, aside from the destructive influence on children, is this some kind of deliberate, if you might call it, psychological warfare, this Harry Potter series?
Yeah, right. That's a good question. Do you feel that this is a psychological warfare that's being waged against the minds and hearts and souls of our kids?
Well, certainly our children are targeted. If they can't read, Harry Potter is put onto audio tape so that children, the moment they begin school as young as 6 years old, can certainly hear the Harry Potter stories. It's marketed, ferociously marketed, you know, with all the marketing pop paraphernalia that comes with the book, so it goes beyond just reading. But I think certainly we see that the children are being targeted, their minds are being targeted, the schoolroom is being targeted. Now that's where children learn supposedly morals and ethics, even though Christian morals and ethics have been taken out of the schoolroom, the Bible has been taken out. However, Harry's ethics, which are situation ethics, they're not based on absolutes. I mean, Harry can waver from book to book and situation to situation, depending how he feels and what would be the better way of doing things. And his teachers reward him for telling lies. He rewards his little friend Hermione, who wants so much to be with Ron and Harry and be part of the duo, that had she lied, had she deceived, she would have been welcomed into the group. And indeed, when she did lie and become deceptive, then she was welcomed into the duo, and which became the trio. So we see that children are being able to set their own standards depending on the experience, and all of this is part of the new morality that is a very important part of schooling. And also the dumbing down, in a sense, reading is being dumbed down. It's not necessarily that the children can read, it's that the teacher is reading to them aloud in the classroom. So it's much more than the children being taught to read. They are being taught principles and ethics.
But there are the wrong principles and the wrong ethics. Anything else, Terry?
Yeah, what I was trying to get at, sometimes when Dr. Stan has spoken, he will mention some authors. Then he'll also mention that it's maybe Luther's Trust that's funding it, or Rockefeller. Is this Rawlings just an individual who's writing and put on his books, or is she, or does anyone know if she's affiliated with any groups like the Technical Research or OTO, or is she just an individual, or what?
Well, she is an individual author, there's no doubt about it, but her political leanings and her political activities in universities were, she was involved with Amnesty International, she supports her, the money from her book supports UNICEF and global political issues. So while, yes, she's an individual, her politics is politically correct. Her writing fits into the curriculum of American schooling, and so, you know, is she part of some huge organization? I don't know. Or has some huge organization chosen her, just as perhaps the Beatles were chosen by...
I think that the answer to that, Terry, would be that the occult establishment is pushing her. Now, can we point to various individuals or organizations? Well, Time Warner. Time Warner certainly is one of the major enemies of Christianity and freedom, and you've got Ted Turner there, who hates Christianity, is on the board of Time Warner. They are certainly pushing her, but the entire media, you know, all of the major media outlets are pushing this,
and
they
Ted
are all
Turner,
guided by the same demonic forces, in my estimation.
And Ted Turner is pro-one-worldism,
right.
And you know, so... One has to see that they'll pull people that think along their lines into... I mean, they'll promote people that think along their lines.
And I think that would be the best explanation. We don't have any... and don't even have the facilities to do a more complete check on Miss Rawlings, but certainly the people who are pushing this are the enemies of freedom and the enemies of God.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
God bless. Thanks so much. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I was going to just tell a little story about when I was on the television program, national television, called Unscrewed. I was only on for about 6 minutes, and I talked a little bit about the emblem on the back of the dollar bill and about the Luciferian movement in America, and I mentioned witchcraft. I did not say it was Luciferian, because it's not. It's tapping into a different segment of the dimension. But I got this incensed letter by this witch, who told me how wonderful witches were. And really, of course, that there were a few bad witches. They were the black witches, but she was a white witch. And as she went on to say, that we, of course, learn our spells and learn our incantations because we want to come in contact with beings from the other dimension. We want to come in contact or be able to contact people, contact the beings from the other dimension. Well, she wants to contact the spirit world, and that's where they get their power from. Had you ever heard any of the witches that you contacted ever talk about that sort of thing?
Oh, yes. In fact, in the film, in the video that I made, Harry Potter Witchcraft Repackaged, there are actual witches that we interviewed in that movie. And the witches freely talked about the powers and the energies that are out there in the universe. And of course, Harry Potter is interacting with the spirit world. He gets information from his dead parents that come back and visit him. He gets power from the dead that are around him. There are the ghosts that are in the corridors of Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry that are giving information. There is a teacher that gets into a sort of trance state where she becomes demonized, demon-possessed, and gives out information of prophecy. So what children are being taught through the Harry Potter books is about this other world, but it's being put across in such an incredible child-friendly way with tremendous humor, things that occultists don't even learn and didn't learn in the old days. A few decades ago, they'd have to go into the dark corridors of foreign countries or into occult places, hidden places. But now, out in Barnes & Noble, on our televisions, young children can go and learn these things openly. So here we see that witchcraft is becoming mainstream, and that they are targeting our children, younger and younger children, that dressed up at midnight for the release of Harry Potter's book number 6 on the streets of America and around the world in witches and wizards garb, and adults were encouraging them, television celebrities were discussing and talking to these children, saying, what inspiration did you get out of the books? And they're discussing how Harry is a role model to them. I mean, it is just the most incredible thing to see that we are allowing our children to be drawn into the fantasy world, into the other world, and that we're making it so reachable and so touchable and such fun.
And even on our local television and news, which we thoroughly enjoy, they had all the specials, several nights dealing with Harry Potter, the nights before it was going to be available, the night it was available, the night after it was available, talking to all the children, talking to the adults. It was all so exciting. There was this air of excitement. They're going to be able to get the Harry Potter books. Nobody has seen the Harry Potter books. Wonderful marketing, but it never could have been accomplished without the full cooperation of all of the major media in the United States.
Exactly.
How could you possibly coordinate all of the major media in the United States? Why, you control all of the major media in the United States. Which one of the major networks has raised the point that this, of course, is demonic and taking people into the forbidden world of the occult? And you're not going to hear that on mainline television, and even on mainline radio. And, of course, they will invite people like Carol to come on there so they can demonize and marginalize her and ridicule her because, why, she thinks there's something wrong with this wonderful literature. And yet, you know, I think it took a lot of courage for you to go onto that radio program, Carol.
Well, thank you. Now, what I find so interesting is, I mean, if people just look and see, why would this book come out at midnight? You know, why would it come out at the darkest times? I mean, just look at all the occult symbology and the stuff that goes with these books. And we're sort of taking away the fear from our children, the sort of built-in anesthesia, the spiritual anesthesia that God gives us to keep away from certain things. And here it's all made fun and fantasy, and one of the films that I made, The Supernatural Powers, The Battle Between Good and Evil, was interviewing children that had dabbled in these kind of things and following them several years later and listening to their stories of what happened as they got into the occult. And I remember talking to one young girl, and she was raised in a Christian family, and she read these books and she thought they were absolutely marvelous, and she thought nothing was wrong with them. And I said, now, let's talk about the dark things and the dark sides. And as time went on, she admitted to me that, yes, she did have nightmares. And yes, because Harry also has nightmares, and Harry also has pains in his stomach, and Harry has withdrawal pains when he can't get to his magic box, and when he has to finish the school term and go to the holidays, and how his stomach hurts when he's kept away from all the stuff that he wants to that he wants to be with. And she did admit that she had nightmares and that there were dark moments. And I talked through these things with her. But you see, because Harry had them, and because Harry was able to fight them or overcome them, these children, when they go through the same symptoms, don't think that anything's wrong with them. When they go through stomach aches or nightmares or fear or have visitations, well, Harry did it. Harry got over it through these powers, so they'll be able to use the same powers and get over it.
Oh, Carol, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, fine. Go ahead. You know, as you talk to people in the Christian community, is there an awareness of what's going on?
Of course, there's two sides. There are those that are really in tune with what's happening, and they're shocked just like you are and are fully aware of what's happening. And then there is another side where publishers are encouraging Christians to say that one can find God through Harry Potter. And when I was, for instance, last week on the radio with this fellow, well-known author that's sold I don't know how many books on finding God in Harry Potter, that he likened Harry Potter to a Christ-like figure and said that because Harry Potter rose from the dead, that he's just like Christ, that Christ rose from the dead, that this happened, that happened, and all the symbology. And I said, one moment, Harry is a witch. How can he be a Christ-like figure? But you see, there's this type of confusion going on in the Christian world where they're told by the opinions of man that it's okay to read Harry Potter and not look at the opinion of God, who says that witchcraft is despicable.
Amen to that. And I think it's so important that people understand that America, once a Christian nation, has turned its back on God, and this is simply one more nail in the coffin of the Christianity of this country. And the fact that this is being so widely praised and used in our schools and even endorsed by some of our major Christian ministries, this is what's so frightening.
It really is, and I think that's what grieves me the most, that Christians are listening to certain shepherds in ministries that are saying, look, it's all right, to read this, it's only literature, it's only fantasy, at least thank goodness our children are reading. Well, Dr. Stan, I promise you I can get a room full of boys, 11, 12, 13 year olds, to start reading if I give them Playboy magazines or Penthouse or some such pornographic junk. I could get them to read. So do we not care about the content of what our children read anymore? Has reading become the idol and not the content of what they're reading?
I think it really is a sophisticated type of argument. Unless you've thought of the alternative and answer to it, really, how can you come out against reading? But, of course, it's so important, not that you're reading, but it's what you're reading that's important. And these kids would be better off not reading at all than reading this sort of thing.
Well, no, particularly because in a few years they will be fully fledged, indoctrinated into paganism, and that at this young age they've already been, in a sense, targeted and told that it's okay. They've got their TV shows that are promoting Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, so they're getting it through entertainment, through school, and being literally bombarded.
And, of course, the churches are not warning the people. This, I think, is the biggest problem.
Well, the churches are being dumbed down, too.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment. If you'd like to give us a call, we've got time for one more call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. What's your webpage, Carol?
Carol, C-A-R-Y-L, that's the way I spell my name, CARYLTV.com.
CarolTV.com. And, of course, we will tell you a little bit later how to get the various videos we've been talking about. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening has been Carol Matriciana, and we've got 3 minutes before we have to let Carol go. But as you, of course, talked to, did you have call-ins on this radio program you were on, Carol, or was this just simply an interview?
Well, there have been, over the last couple of weeks, I've had several interviews, and, of course, I've been thrown into the camp of being book-burning, banning Harry Potter, calling him evil, and being the party pooper, and then others that are a little bit more sympathetic. But really, people that call in, I think the shows where they call in, they've been very they've been very concerned, and they understand the concern after they hear the argument and realize on several different levels that we can get Harry Potter out of the classroom because it's 101 basic witchcraft. And, you know, really the bottom line is that our children are being targeted to learn to have a different worldview.
And, of course, they've taken the Bible out of our schoolrooms, and they brought the witchcraft 101 and 102, and now we're up to 106 into the classroom. So
right.
Why would they take the Bible out and bring witchcraft in? And I think you have to understand that everything is following a script. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the parents to know. And I think it takes a lot of courage to go onto radio programs and defend your position, especially when you're accused of being a book burner. But, you know, the thing is that you're not suggesting they burn the books. You just don't think it's appropriate to take the Bible out and to put witchcraft into the classrooms and ask them their opinion of that.
Yes, yes. And also because the subtlety of it is it's just they're marketing it as well. It's just fantasy. No, they're redefining the religion of witchcraft as fantasy. Harry Potter may be a fictional creature, a fictional boy, but it's in the real world of witchcraft, which our children are being read, are being taught how to participate, how to know everything about witchcraft, and learning Harry's world year by year from each book is a further indoctrination. And J.K. Rowling herself says that it'll take 7 years to make a perfect wizard, and Harry is now in his sixth year, and we can see him from book to book getting more proficient, more powerful as he learns more, as he gets into his human potential, as it's called, but of course it's his power potential clicking into his dead father and the spiritual world that his dead father is able to connect Harry to.
Well, we're out of time. God bless. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and these books are not fiction, they're faction. They are simply mixing facts with fiction, but of course the facts are absolutely true. Now, if you're interested in knowing more about Carol Matriciana's films, Harry Potter, Witchcraft Revisited, The Supernatural, and then her book, her video on witchcraft, and then the one on Gods of Entertainment, where she goes into what they're doing in Hollywood, of course, to destroy Christianity, and she even interviews there one of the producers from Hollywood, who says the purpose of Hollywood is not to make money, it's to destroy Christianity. And when you begin to understand that Christianity is under attack today, why, you can understand exactly what we've been talking about during this last hour. Again, that is Harry Potter, witchcraft, repackaged, supernatural patterns, witchcraft, and, of course, the Gods of Entertainment. Fascinating material. It is available, and Carol does a wonderful job producing these videos. She's a very, very talented and very lovely and very wonderful person who we're very proud to have as a friend of here at Radio Liberty. So if you'd like to know more about those videos, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And you have to learn basically how to address these issues. What they are doing is programming into the minds of our children, a whole generation of children, the idea that this is fun, that tapping into the supernatural is fun, that you can be like Harry. You can, of course, have the powers that Harry has. And as I saw the pictures there on television of the children waiting to get their Harry Potter books, and so many of them had etched on their forehead the lightning bolt, which Harry has, the birthmark that he has. And so they are identifying with Harry Potter. What a terrible thing we're doing to our children. And where is the outcry? And, of course, it's deafening in its silence. Well, of course, we do hope that many of you will give us a call on 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, I think our last newsletter, The Occult Hierarchy Part 2. Now, of course, we have The Occult Hierarchy Part 1. We'll be glad to send you either one of them, perhaps not both. If you have access to the Internet, you can go up and read them, both of them there, as well as all of our other newsletters. You have our permission to pull down the newsletters. You have the permission to copy those newsletters and help us to get the truth out across America. Because we have to depend on you. We don't have a budget for reaching people or for advertising or mass mailings. Our major function is to be here, to provide you the information, to provide you great guests like Carol, and then to encourage you to get other people listening to our programs. You can go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day there on the Internet, or 4 hours a day on shortwave, or 5 hours a day on satellite, or 5 hours a day someplace in America on radio, because radio is the last means we have of reaching the people with the truth about the spiritual battle we're engaged in today, the spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. And right now, why, we don't seem to be doing very well. The forces of darkness seem to be descending upon the earth. The issue, the incidence of terrorism and chaos and crisis and fear is rising throughout the world, here in the United States. And you can almost feel that the hand of God is being withdrawn from this nation. Can it be reversed? Only if there's revival in this country. Only if people really understand what the issues are. We do what we do in the hopes that you will join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. Remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our website, radioliberty.com. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection until Monday. May the Lord be with you.